This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
When we picture a Cold War, the images that come to mind are, you know, inherently physical, right?
Right, yeah. Like the Iron Curtain.
Exactly. You think of the Iron Curtain or like satellite photos of missile silos.
Or concrete walls cutting right through a city.
Yeah. It's always about geography. You are either standing on this side of the line or you are standing on that side.
The historical framework has just always been a geographical binary, but the infrastructure of power has completely shifted.
And that is exactly what we are exploring today, because this week, mid-July 2026, a new kind of wall is being constructed at a terrifying speed.
And you can't even touch it.
No, you can't. It's completely invisible. It's made of code, compute power, and algorithmic frameworks.
Yeah, it's a totally different landscape now.
We are going to unpack a highly detailed intelligence briefing that was provided to us by lawyer Kyungjin Kim. The material is pretty dense, but the mission for our deep dive today is straightforward.
We basically need to understand this monumental shift, right?
Right, the transition from a traditional hardware-based semiconductor conflict into a full-blown software and model Cold War. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Well, the focus of this briefing revolves heavily around Chinese AI, robotics, semiconductors, and telecommunications.
Right.
For the past few years, the prevailing narrative was, you know, entirely about hardware.
Because the U.S. was aggressively placing export controls on those frontier physical microchips like NVIDIA's GPUs.
Exactly, preventing them from crossing into China. The assumption was just that if you choke off the physical silicon, you control the software.
But according to the intelligence brief lawyer Kyungjin Kim shared, the exact opposite is happening.
Yeah, the retaliation isn't physical at all.
It's digital. We are seeing reports that China's Commerce Ministry is actively preparing restrictions on foreign access to their advanced AI models.
They are threatening to literally lock the doors on the software itself.
Which is wild. And the mechanism they are proposing to do this is really fascinating.
It is. The Supreme People's Court Journal just outlined a proposed three-tier management system to structure this digital wall.
Right, the three tiers.
Yeah, so tier one is just basic open source tools. Those simply require a basic registration.
Makes sense.
Tier two covers advanced tech, which mandates a pretty rigorous state security review.
But tier three, the frontier models.
The proposal stipulates those are strictly for domestic use only or just completely banned from public release.
See, I have to pause here and push back on the economic reality of that strategy.
How so?
Well, looking at the data in the brief, Chinese open weight models currently account for like 48% of the token consumption on major global API platforms like OpenRouter.
That's a massive chunk of the market.
Right. They are dominating the open source ecosystem. So if they suddenly geo-block foreign developers from accessing those models, aren't they just amputating their own global influence?
You'd think so.
I mean, developers will just pivot back to Meta's Llama or Mistral. It feels like complete economic suicide.
Well, in a normal, frictionless free market, you would be absolutely correct. But former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim's commentary points to a level of paranoia in the industry right now that completely overrides standard market logic.
The paranoia is just that intense.
Oh, absolutely. The risk of intellectual property theft is viewed as an existential threat. It's seen as way larger than the loss of API revenue.
Wow.
And there is a specific incident from just a few days ago, on July 10th, that illustrates exactly why tensions are so high.
Right, the Alibaba situation.
Yes. Alibaba completely banned its entire workforce from using Anthropic's Claude code.
And they didn't just ban it. I mean, they ordered a scorched earth deletion of all Anthropic models from their internal systems.
Everything. Sonnet, Opus, Fable, all of it.
Gone. They forced the entire engineering team to migrate to an in-house tool called Coder, literally overnight.
And the catalyst for that sudden ban is just a textbook case of modern corporate espionage.
It really is.
Anthropic accused a network of around 25,000 fake accounts of executing a massive distillation attack against their systems over a six-week period.
Okay, let's unpack the mechanics of a distillation attack for you listening, because the term gets thrown around a lot.
It's a good idea to clarify it.
The popular analogy is, it's like sending 25,000 spies into a Michelin star restaurant to order everything on the menu, take meticulous tasting notes, and then bring those notes back to a cheap diner to recreate the food.
That analogy captures the spirit of the theft, for sure, but the actual technical mechanism is much more insidious than that.
How does it actually work under the hood?
Well, in a distillation attack, the smaller, cheaper student model isn't just copying the final output of the massive teacher model. It is mathematically analyzing the probability distributions.
Okay.
When an AI generates a sentence, it assigns a mathematical weight to what the next word should be, based on trillions of parameters.
Right. It's essentially guessing the most likely next word.
Exactly. A distillation attack uses millions of targeted queries, and in this case, it was 28.8 million queries, to map out those specific weights and biases.
So they're not just stealing the output, they're stealing the actual brain pattern.
Precisely. The attacking company then adjusts the internal architecture of their own cheat model to mimic that exact mathematical pattern. They're essentially stealing a multi-million dollar training process for pennies.
Which explains why Anthropic was screaming corporate espionage.
Yeah, they were furious.
But the paranoia goes both ways here. Alibaba didn't just delete Claude out of guilt.
No, they didn't.
Security researchers digging into the Claude code software discovered hidden routines actively profiling the user.
This is where it gets crazy.
Yeah, the code was scraping user time zones and inspecting proxy configurations specifically to detect if the developer was physically sitting inside China.
Anthropic was quietly embedding geo-surveillance into their coding assistant.
And when Alibaba discovered they were being monitored, trust just completely evaporated.
Right. This is the invisible wall being built in real time.
It's happening right now.
We are moving toward a reality where an AI model is treated legally and technically like a classified weapon system that cannot cross a border.
It's wild to think about, but, you know, while they are building these digital fortresses to keep foreigners out, the briefing highlights a violent internal restructuring of how AI operates inside China as well.
Yeah, it's a massive shift domestically.
And it starts with a complete disruption of how artificial intelligence is priced. DeepSeek is launching the official version of their V4 model this week.
Right, highly anticipated.
And they are introducing something completely unprecedented. Here's where it gets really interesting, you guys.
Oh, yeah, the pricing model.
They've essentially invented Uber search pricing for AI.
It is the exact same economic model as an Uber or a Lyft, but applied to raw intelligence.
Which is just brilliant, but also kind of terrifying.
They have designated peak hours, so... Yeah. 9 a.m. to noon, mm-hmm. and 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. Beijing time.
Standard work hours.
Right. During the workday, the API price doubles. But if developers are willing to run their compute-heavy tasks off-peak, the cost plummets to a level that Western companies simply cannot compete with.
To give you an idea, generating 1 million tokens on their massive V4 Pro model during off-peak hours is only 6 RMB.
That's less than one U.S. dollar.
It's absurd. And if you hit their prompt cash, the input tokens drop to 0.025 RMB. I mean, the compute is virtually free.
Practically giving it away.
But how is that technically possible? Because even with cheap electricity, running massive trillion parameter models is incredibly expensive.
The secret lies in the architecture itself.
Okay, lay it on me.
So DeepSeek V4 Pro is a 1.6 trillion parameter model, but it operates on a MoE, or mixture of experts, framework.
Meaning what?
Meaning,
exactly.
Instead of firing up all 1.6 trillion neural connections for every single prompt, the system acts like a hyper-efficient router.
Oh.
It analyzes the prompt and only activates the specific 49 billion parameters, the experts that are needed for that exact task.
So it's the computational equivalent of only turning on the lights in the specific room you were walking into, rather than lighting up the entire skyscraper.
That's a perfect analogy, yes.
And they are being ruthless about forcing adoption, too.
Very ruthless.
DeepSeek is deprecating all their legacy models by July 24th. To force their entire user base onto this hyper-efficient surge-priced architecture.
It signals a massive pivot toward maximum industrial utility.
Right.
What's fascinating here is we are seeing that same aggressive push for cheap utility across the entire sector. Zipu AI just released their Z-Code harness, which is a coding environment based on their GLM 5.2 model.
Right, squarely targeting Anthropic's market share.
Exactly. Their pro tier is priced at $65 a month. That's roughly a fifth of what Anthropic demands.
And ByteDance is doing the exact same thing in the creative space.
Oh, the video generation.
Yes. They're launching a staggering 4K video generation API called Cadence 2.5.
It's incredibly powerful.
This system takes up to 50 simultaneous inputs. So images, audio clips, text prompts, and renders native 30-second 4K video with perfectly synchronized voice generation.
And there's a really interesting piece of industry gossip in the briefing about this.
Oh, the Hollywood drama?
Yeah. Major Hollywood studios are currently on a PR tour protesting the copyright ethics of these video models.
Very publicly complaining about them.
Right. But behind closed doors, their post-production houses are quietly funneling data into Seedens 2.5.
Of course they are.
Because the rendering is just too cheap and too fast to ignore.
Which brings us to a glaring contradiction in the state strategy.
It's a huge contradiction.
On one hand, you have this massive subsidization and rollout of AI designed for raw economic productivity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like coding, video rendering, industrial problem solving.
Right.
But simultaneously, there is a brutal overnight crackdown on another massive sector of the AI industry.
The emotional AI ban.
Yes. As of July 15th, a new national regulation on AI anthropomorphism goes into effect, and it specifically targets virtual companions and emotional exchange agents.
It's a total sweep.
If a chatbot is designed to simulate a human relationship, act as a virtual family member, or provide emotional support to minors, it is now strictly prohibited.
Any agent with over 100,000 monthly active users now faces an immediate provincial-level safety assessment.
And the tech giants aren't even waiting around to see how strictly it will be enforced, are they?
No, they're just pulling the plug. Alibaba's Tongyi Hyunwen shut down its agent features on July 10th and announced all user data will be permanently wiped by October.
The scale of the collateral damage is just hard to wrap your head around. I mean, ByteDance's Doubao platform is being completely gutted.
Yeah, and that ecosystem had 345 million monthly active users.
345 million. For context, that is more than the entire population of the United States. And the state is perfectly fine watching that entire network go dark in a matter of days.
It reveals a very cold, calculating view of computational bandwidth. Well, high-end GPUs and server racks are a finite, precious resource, especially under Western sanctions. The state does not want millions of teraflops of compute wasted on lonely teenagers talking to virtual girlfriends or, you know, chatbots role-playing as anime characters.
Right.
They want every single ounce of processing power directed at industrial output. They are pruning the branches of the AI tree they view as socially risky, just to pour all the nutrients into the roots of the real economy.
Wow. But, you know, that pivot to the real economy raises a massive logistical question.
Which is?
You can ban chatbots and subsidize coding APIs all day long, but true industrial AI requires a staggering amount of physical infrastructure to operate in the real world.
It requires an army of hardware.
Right. And we are constantly told that China is starved of advanced chips.
Right.
So how are they planning to actually run all this code in the physical world if they are locked out of Western hardware?
Well, the intelligence provided by lawyer Kim Jin Kim shows they are building a parallel physical ecosystem at a pace that is honestly difficult for Western analysts to fully comprehend.
Give me some numbers, because the robotics boom is crazy.
Look at the projections from the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIT. They are forecasting the production of over 100,000 humanoid robots in China this year alone.
100,000. That is a six-fold increase from 2025.
It is.
The financial momentum behind this is wild. I mean, Agibot's G2 industrial humanoid just crossed a cumulative production of 15,000 units, taking a 39% global market share in industrial humanoids.
We have unbelievable growth.
And Unitree Robotics just had its IPO approved for the STAR market in 73 days. It is aiming for a valuation of nearly 8 trillion South Korean won.
Backed by heavyweights, too, like Sequoia China, Tencent, and Alibaba.
Right. It feels like they are building a sci-fi army overnight, but I'm still stuck on the computing juice required for this.
The silicon problem.
Yeah. You cannot power a sci-fi army of 100,000 industrial humanoids on legacy silicon. If NVIDIA chips are banned, where is the processing power coming from? Are these robots running on empty?
The answer is sitting in Guangdong province at the Shaoguan Compute Cluster, which officially went online on July 9th.
And what did they build there?
China Telecom built a 10,000-card computing cluster from the ground up.
And the brief notes, they built the entire facility in 90 days.
90 days.
I mean, in the West, it takes longer than 90 days just to get the environmental permit to pour the concrete for a data center.
Exactly. The speed is staggering, but the architecture is the real story here. The cluster didn't use a single piece of NVIDIA silicon.
Not one.
They deployed 11,520 Huawei Ascend AI accelerator chips to achieve 9,000 petaflops of computing power.
Okay, we need to decode how monumental that is. For years, the consensus was that even if a competitor could print a microchip as fast as NVIDIA, they could never replace CUD.
Right, NVIDIA's proprietary software platform.
Yeah, the software that allows the hardware to actually communicate with AI models. The software moat was supposed to be insurmountable.
But Huawei decided to just build their own moat. The Shaoguan cluster is entirely self-sustaining. The silicon is Chinese, the operating system is Chinese, and the algorithmic framework connecting them, Huawei's Canaan architecture, completely bypasses Western standards.
Wow.
This isn't just a workaround. It is a proof of concept for a completely independent computing ecosystem.
And they're using the WAIC 2026 conference in Shanghai this week to just flaunt it, right?
Exactly. Huawei is displaying the physical unit of their Atlas 950 there, basically signaling to the world that they no longer need the West to scale.
Which brings us to the geopolitical headache at the center of this entire deep dive.
It's a massive headache.
Because this massive buildup of independent Chinese hardware creates a terrifying dilemma for one specific player caught directly in the crossfire.
Right.
Former lawmaker King Jin Kim's analysis frames this entire week as a highly complex trap for South Korea.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, South Korea is arguably in the most precarious position of any tech economy on Earth right now.
But if you just look at the stock market, you would think South Korea is totally winning the Cold War.
On paper, they are crushing it.
Yeah. SK Hynix debuted its ADR on the NASDAQ on July 10th, which is basically a mechanism allowing foreign companies to trade on U.S. exchanges, and it was a historic success.
Huge debut.
It surged 13% on day one, closing at $168. It's now the largest ADR ever at $26.5 billion.
Wall Street is just so hungry for their chips that Granite Shares is launching 2x leveraged ETFs just so traders can bet even heavier on them.
Right. The obsession is specifically with HBM high bandwidth memory chips.
Right. South Korea essentially holds a global monopoly on this critical component.
Let's explain why HBM is the ultimate bottleneck for the listener. Because people usually assume the GPU, the processor itself, is the only thing that matters.
Yeah, that's a common misconception. The processor is the engine, but it suffers from what engineers call the memory wall.
The memory wall.
Yes. A modern AI processor is incredibly fast, but standard memory chips are like a one-lane highway trying to feed data into a Formula One engine.
Ah, so the processor ends up just sitting idle, waiting for the data to arrive.
Exactly. HBM solves this by stacking memory chips vertically, almost like a skyscraper, with thousands of microscopic elevators moving data up and down simultaneously.
This is brilliant.
You cannot run a frontier AI model without HBM. And Samsung and SK Hynix basically control the entire supply.
And they're leaning into it. They are pouring 800 trillion KRW into domestic investments to build four advanced fabs right at home.
Massive investment.
And Samsung just posted a Q2 operating profit of 89.4 trillion KRW, a 19-fold year-over-year increase. It sounds like total dominance.
It really does.
So what does this all mean? If Korea is making that much money in the U.S. market, why is former lawmaker King Jin Kim warning that they are stepping into a trap?
Because being the sole supplier to two superpowers preparing for a digital war makes you the ultimate target.
Ah, the squeeze.
Yeah. The Korea Jungang Daily recently highlighted the vulnerability. That 800 trillion KRW domestic investment is already drawing the ire of the United States.
Because Washington wants that capital invested on American soil to secure the U.S. supply chain.
Exactly. The U.S. expects total loyalty.
But the briefing outlines a massive countermove from Beijing.
Right. Huawei is actively flooding the Korean market.
I read they are bringing their Ascend 950 series chips and Atlas SuperPods into South Korea in the fourth quarter of this year.
And they aren't sneaking in either. They've already signed massive distribution agreements with major Korean integrators like SK Shieldus.
It's crazy. These Atlas SuperPods can pack up to 8,192 Ascend chips in a single deployment.
It's a huge amount of compute.
And the pitch Huawei is making to Korean tech companies is incredibly compelling. They claim the Ascend 950 offers nearly three times the inference performance of NVIDIA's H20 chip, but at a quarter of the price.
Now, we do need to distinguish between training and inference here.
Fair point.
Huawei's chips might still struggle slightly to train a massive frontier model from scratch compared to NVIDIA's top-tier hardware. But for inference, you know, the actual day-to-day running of the model, answering user queries and rendering video, the Ascend 950 is highly optimized and incredibly cheap.
So South Korea is really caught in a vice grip.
They absolutely are.
They are selling the critical HBM memory chips to the U.S. that power American AI dominance. But simultaneously, their domestic tech sector is preparing to buy thousands of Ascend chips from China as a cheap, powerful alternative to NVIDIA.
They are acting as the load-bearing pillar for both the Western and Eastern tech ecosystems at the exact same time.
That sounds completely unsustainable.
It is. As the software embargoes tighten and the hardware restrictions escalate, the pressure from Washington and Beijing to choose a side will just become unbearable.
So if you're listening, why should you care about any of this?
That's the big question.
Yeah. If you were listening and thinking this is just high-level supply chain drama, I want to assure you this trickles down to everything you touch.
It really does.
This geopolitical chess match dictates what AI tools will be legally available in your app store next year. It dictates the surge pricing you might have to pay just to use a coding assistant at 2 p.m.
Yeah, say goodbye to cheap AI at lunchtime.
Right, and it means the internal architecture of every smart device, virtual assistant, and piece of software you rely on is being fundamentally rewritten to survive in a divided world.
The foundational assumption of the modern internet, that technology is borderless and globally interoperable, is quietly dying.
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over. For 30 years, we have lived in the era of the World Wide Web, a single interconnected digital reality.
The whole point was connection.
Right. But if AI models are now classified as national security assets that cannot be shared, and the silicon hardware required to run those models is hoarded into parallel, mutually exclusive ecosystems, are we witnessing the birth of the splinternet?
It is a profound shift to consider. We are really accelerating toward a future of entirely separate tech realities.
Separate internets.
Essentially, yes. Within a few years, a revolutionary AI breakthrough, or a completely new way of interacting with a computer, or even a massive digital cultural phenomenon could occur in one half of the world and remain completely invisible, technically incompatible, and legally inaccessible to the other half.
We started this deep dive looking at the difference between physical borders and digital ones. We might soon realize that a wall built out of proprietary code, geofenced models, and incompatible silicon is infinitely harder to tear down than one made of concrete.
Yeah, you can't just take a sledgehammer to a firewall.
No, you can't. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Keep questioning the systems you use every day. Until next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.